Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm sitting here, as always, with Bill Bregoli.
Hey there.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm wearing pants.
And we have a guest from Newsday, Rafer Guzman.
Hello.
There you go. So if you're joining us for the first time, well, first of all, here's what we're talking about today. We're talking about Hail Caesar, the new Coen Brothers movie.
Hail no.
Which is, opening in theaters this weekend. And we're going to look at all the Coen Brothers films and kind of put them in context of which ones you like, which ones you don't like. We're also going to talk about some movies that are just coming to demand that are also kind of like opening in theaters at the same time, like Freeheld with Ellen Page and Julian Moore, and Suffragette with Carey Mulligan and Helena Bonham Carter, and Rock the Casbah with Bill Murray. And we're also going to talk about some other stuff out of the box. Bill McCuddy wants to talk about the X-Files, the new X-Files, and I want to talk about Horace and Pete, which is the new Louis C.K. TV series, which breaks the model of how you watch a television show and how you pay for it.
Listen this week anyway. We'll do the Horace and Pete later.
The Horace and Pete thing is great, by the way.
Well, I want to hear about it because I haven't seen it.
Well, I'm going to start talking about Horace and Pete. No, I'm going to start talking about Hail Caesar, and then we'll talk about Horace and Pete. All right, Hail Caesar. So,
I think we all went to the same screen. Actually, Rafer, you saw it first.
I saw it earlier.
You saw it a couple weeks ago. But we were all... the three of us were at the same screening.
If you're joining us for the first time, yes, we were. If you're joining us for the first time, this is sort of an after show to a television show that we do locally in New York on New York One called Talking Pictures and Talking. Did I say Talking Pictures?
Yeah, Talking.
Talking Pictures.
Apparently and, it originates in Brooklyn. This
nationally.
Who's your vocal coach, Neil?
It's my Bronx roots. And Time Warner Cable nationally. And Rafer joined us this week. And Rafer, why don't you just kind of tell everybody what Hail Caesar is about.
All right. It's the new Coen Brothers movie. This is the third collaboration, right, with the Coen Brothers and Clooney. Not really the star of this. He does play an actor named Baird Whitlock, who is kidnapped by communists. The movie takes place in the 50s, I should say. The real star of this is Josh Brolin, who plays Eddie Mannix. He's a fixer, like a Hollywood studio fixer. It's his job to manipulate the press, keep all his stars happy, keep them out of trouble, keep the machine running. And it's, I thought it was like a great period piece, a great like love letter to the great old Hollywood movies of the 40s and 50s. You get to see the Coen brothers do their version of a Western, their version of an Ethel Merman musical with Scarlett Johansson, their version
well, I thought
of
it was like an Esther Williams musical.
Esther Williams, excuse me. What did I say?
You said Ethel Merman.
Ethel Merman, sorry about that.
Well, Esther Merman wet.
Esther right, there is no
Ethel Merman wet.
Esther Williams made all those.
That doesn't paint a very good picture.
Well, Esther Williams was an Olympic athlete.
Yes, that's
true.
Ethel Merman wasn't.
Yes.
After
Ethel
she
Merman
won these
not.
Medals from, in the swimming events, Hollywood, she went out to Hollywood, Esther Williams, and they built these aquatic
the aquatic musicals, right?
Around her. And Scarlett Johansson, which I think is really funny in this, it's like Josh Brolin, who's a fixer, goes, your movies are doing, we make a couple of bucks.
The aquatic musicals do very well for us.
Yeah, exactly. Do very well for us. That's absolely right. So go on, keep describing the movie. And
well, I just thought it was wonderful. I think I really think that the jewel in the crown in this movie is that musical number. It's like a World War II, shipping off to the into the Navy with Channing Tatum
on he the town this, kind of
yeah,
that sort
very
of...
yeah very on the town. It's a musical called No Dames, and it's just this fantastic scene. I mean, the choreography is incredible. They're dancing on the table. The tablecloths are being yanked out from underneath them. I thought it was just fantastic.
That's great.
I love
that
the movie.
Scene is amazing.
Yeah.
I have to tell you. I also have to tell you, if you're a Jonah Hill fan, you only need to watch the commercial on television because the 4.5 seconds is his entire part in the whole movie.
Yes, that's
which
true.
Leads me to believe that there's a lot more of this movie on the cutting room floor, even though we're told the Coens are very efficient filmmakers. They have the whole film in their head. They shoot only what they need, as they told Bill Bregoli recently. And I guess we're going to hear from Clooney in a second, and also from Channing Tatum. But I got to tell you, this thing is just like a series of blackouts and vignettes to me that don't add up to anything. And I think that's why, as one of our colleagues pointed out on the show today, it's getting dumped in late January, early February. It's just not up to the normal Coen Brothers standard.
I don't agree. I think that the Coen Brothers... you know, it's sort of, I agree with Rafer. What I really like are these movies within the movies, not only the Channing Tatum movie, that No Dames movie, but the Scarlett Johansson movie. And then there's a sort of a drawing room comedy, Noel Coward-y kind of movie. And you see these actual movies, you know, and then the camera pulls back and then you're on the soundstage of the movie. And it's kind of like a look behind the curtain at during the golden age of Hollywood. I like the Josh Brolin character, how he runs the studio and how Tilda Swinton plays dual roles as sisters, yeah, who are both gossip columnists vying to see who's going to get the scoop first. And it's sort of modeled after like the Hedda Hopper thing. We're in the days before the internet and before Twitter and, you know, Instagram, where you could actually shut a columnist up. There was only a handful of them. And he's kind of like, you know, oh, I've got stories on your star. You know, yes, it's like, and, you know, and he has like, you know, he's able to like fix the problem.
That's all interesting.
And I found this very interesting.
It's not a movie.
I also found it very interesting that, you know, George Clooney's character gets kidnapped. He's the big star. They're making this epic called Hail Caesar. You know, that's their big prestige film that Capitol Pictures, this fictitious movie studio. Yes. By the way, what studio lot did they film this on?
It looked like Paramount.
Looked like Paramount to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I kept thinking.
So, you know, and he's kidnapped by these communist that, like, you know, and one of them goes, which is great, he goes, you know, we try to sneak as many communist messages subtly into films as we can, which is exactly what the House and Un-American Activities Committee was scared of, why they blacklisted these people, you know, and so there's all this inside stuff, and if you are a movie fan and enamored with that era, as I am, I found a lot of nuggets in there that I really enjoyed, and I enjoyed the film. What about you, Bregoli? What did you think of the thing?
It's kind of like a great big Whitman sampler, where individual pieces are a lot of fun, but you try to eat the whole thing, and
you
get a little woozy.
Well, there's this guy, which I also found funny. This actor by the name of Alden
Ehrenreich,
yeah, right, who's playing this like moronic cowboy. He was like, you know,
kind of like a Roy Rogers type.
Right, he was like Gibson, or one of those. He was like taken from. He was like a star of like a rodeo or something.
Yeah.
And they bring him out to Hollywood, and he's fine in these dumb cowboy pictures.
But he doesn't talk.
Right, and then all of a sudden they want to put him in this, you know, like sophisticated like drawing room comedy. Right. You know, and Ralph Fiennes is the director, and he can't even like deliver.
That's a very, very funny scene. Having him deliver this.
Like he had like one line to deliver, and they just keep, they're like, no. You
that's
know,
funny.
Over the torso.
I laughed there.
Yes, it was.
I loved the movie.
Fink is a far superior behind-the-scenes look at Hollywood, with Michael Lerner as the studio head screaming at Barton Fink.
I want to talk about Barton Fink, but before we do.
Yes, I have some sound, because that's my business. I collect a lot of sound.
So as we all agree, even I who don't love the movie, Channing Tatum's dance number is amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the pinnacle of the film.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the best moment.
And Channing himself said that he thought he could just get away with mimicking a few tap dance moves, but he found out that it was a lot more complicated than that.
I just figured that I could learn the tap movement and it would make the sound. But what I found is that you really need to be musical. You're playing an instrument. It's not, I don't even think they should call it tap dancing. They should just call it like foot percussion or something.
And my next piece of sound is George Clooney talking about working with the Coens, and as Bill alluded to earlier, they are apparently very efficient filmmakers.
When you get their screenplay, basically that's the screenplay you shoot. They shoot literally only the shots that they're ever going to use. And they'll go, we'll only use it from here to here, so just we'll just shoot that part. They've already edited the film in their heads. And it's incredible confidence, and it's panned out for them because they make really wonderful films.
You know, the guy to talk to here wasn't really Clooney in this film, as it turns out, even though it looks like in the trailer and the commercials that he's the star. It's Josh Brolin.
Yeah, yeah.
Josh Brolin, by the way, I talked to a couple of Hollywood people who told me the real Eddie Mannix was like a thug, and he killed people. I mean, they've definitely made this.
There's a real Eddie Mannix?
Oh, yeah.
There's a real Eddie Mannix.
His name is
Eddie Mannix.
There's no
probably,
Capitol Pictures.
No. Easy, Neil. We're going to try and keep you in the realm of reality.
You're going to try to explain this to me. Okay, fine. Explain it to me.
You know when Scarlett Johansson comes out of the pool and she's not wet? That's because they filmed it in reverse. Anyway, there's lots of other things that we'll connect the dots with for you. But what I'm telling telling you is the guy, the real guy, was like a thug. He was like, he really killed people, and they really got, he supposedly killed George Reeves or had him killed. That's the,
is that right?
Yeah,
that's
the,
that.
He's the guy that did that because the woman that he was sleeping with was connected to one of the studio heads.
And I heard that he was kind of responsible for Ava Gardner's career.
Lots of lore about this guy, the real guy, and he was really a scumbag. But Brolin is fun, and the movie has the potential to be something great, but I just don't think. I think it's a noble misfire from otherwise great talent.
Well, you mentioned Barton Fink before, and this is sort of like a companion piece to Barton Fink, and I really like Barton Fink. I think it's one of the Coen Brothers films that was overlooked. This one takes place in the 40s, and it's about a acclaimed New York playwright modeled loosely after Clifford Odets, who goes out to Hollywood and just hates Tinseltown and all the nonsense that goes on out there, and he's hired to write some fluffy stuff when he's writing these really great plays on Broadway, and played by John Turturro, and he comes up with this awful case of writer's block. And Michael Lerner, who plays the studio head, is just great in Barton Fink. I just remember when it's just the ludicrousness, the ludicrousy of Hollywood, when he's going like, he looks at Barton Fink, played by John Turturro, and goes like, I don't need you to get that Barton Fink feeling. Get me somebody else to get that Barton Fink feeling.
It's a Noah Beery wrestling picture, a Wallace Beery wrestling picture. Do I have to draw you a map? Right. It's just like, if you threw a rock here in the commissary, you'd hit a writer. In fact, I wish you would.
Right, so there's that inimitable Coen Brothers style in Barton Fink, and also in Hail Caesar.
That snappy rat-a-tat-tat. But Hail Caesar feels like the foam that you would skim off of the top of Barton Fink. And the real movie is in Barton Fink, and this is sort of an afterthought.
Nah, I like the film. But, my favorite Coen Brothers movie, what's your favorite Coen Brothers movie?
Raising Arizona.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of people love that film. Why is that?
Because I can come up with lines from that off the top of my head. It's one of those, you've got a line, go out there and get me a toddler. Yes. my seed... Her womb was a barren place where my seed could find no purchase.
Now you're frightening our listeners, I think.
Well, I think Fargo is their best movie. I love Fargo. I mean, that if you really want to see, to me, the definitive Coen Brothers film, I mean, it's hysterically funny. And the Coen Brothers, the story, if you haven't seen it, is, William H. Macy hires two thugs to kidnap his wife. He's got this scheme where he's going to make money. Of course, the thing goes wrong. Francis McDormand, who in real life is Joel Cohen's real wife.
Yeah, for years, since 84.
Wins an Oscar for playing this Minnesota police chief, pregnant police chief, and she's great. The Coen Brothers win an Academy Award for the screenplay, and it's just funny. I mean,
and there's a millennial generation that may only know the television series.
Right.
That didn't know that it had a film like the movie MASH that was also a successful
TV show.
Or Friday Night Lights, but actually that's a better example. Look, I think the interesting thing is that there is no definitive Coen Brothers film, and I think that's what makes them so great is that, we were talking on the show today about Blood Simple being this little noir-y movie that I thought was going to define them, and that's the sort of thing they were going to do forever. And then they came out with all of these dark comedies and all of these serious dramas, The Man Who Wasn't There and the... Just these some odd little cool movies that I think until this horrible, horrible misstep of Hail Caesar, I think they've...
Oh, stop!
They've been great. They're great filmmakers, and you can't really pick a best in show.
They're great. I mean, they're very hit and miss. I think my one objection to them is that they often have a kind of a mean-spiritedness in their movies that sometimes turns me off. That was my big objection to Fargo. I felt that Fargo had a certain kind of condescending attitude toward its characters that I didn't like.
And then they come back with something like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is sweet and charming and doesn't have a bad bone in its body.
Yep. Well, the music is great in that.
The music's amazing.
That I Am a Man of Constant Sorrow number with the Soggy Bottom Boys with Tim Blake Nelson and George Clooney and John Turturro. But I like I like another one that just kind of went overlooked is the Hudsucker Proxy.
I love the Hudsucker Proxy.
Sure.
Which is actually about Paul Newman wants to hire this complete like idiot to like run the company to drive the stock down.
It's a stock scheme, yeah.
Yeah, it's a stock scheme, and hires Tim Robbins, who you know
out of the mailroom.
Yeah. Right. Other than you know, if you think about Tim Robbins, other than Bull Durham. And
Bob Roberts.
Durham and Hudsucker Proxy, he doesn't play the idiot very often. Oh. He usually takes the high ground, you know.
Right.
But he's really good at playing an idiot. And in this one, you know, not only does he get hired for the stock scheme out of the mailroom to run the company, but then he comes up with this brilliant idea, which is the hula hoop.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a circle on a piece of paper.
He turns the circle. He turns this piece of paper around like it's going to be some scientific equation or something. This miracle thing, and it's just a round circle.
It's a lot they still use today, you know, for kids.
Right. And when they sit around trying to name the hula hoop, I mean, if you think about it, the hula hoop is just such a dopey name.
Right.
But they go through like these like 15, you know, different versions of what to call the hula hoop. You know? And I don't remember what they were, but one is funnier than the next.
Wasn't the company called Whammo that came up with it?
The company was called Whammo.
In real life?
Yeah,
You work for a company called Whammo.
Yeah.
You know, you're used to coming up with weird
names.
Whammo.
Made,
and the Frisbee.
That's marketing.
Didn't they also make Silly Putty? Was Whammo Silly Putty? Or was that another company?
I don't know.
The Whammo Company.
If we'd only had stock.
That's true. Exactly. That's true. I'm not one of these lovers of the Big Lebowski, though. I don't know about you. You know.
I don't know. I find it interesting that people, it's got a... turned into a cult film, and I didn't warm up to it either.
The only thing I like in that film, really, is John Turturro as the Jesus.
Yeah.
You know.
the bowling.
Yeah.
But the
bowling
whole
Jesus.
Dude phenomena that's come out
I
for Jeff Bridges.
You know, there's a religion around it. It's called dudism. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, no. I know you're not.
Also based on a real figure,
you
right?
You rarely kid.
A friend of the Coens. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get it. You know.
That's what's remarkable to me about that movie is like the wide range of people from like hipsters and film geeks to my mom, who is just a total fan of the film. My mom loves The Big Lebowski.
I don't know. I just know I would kill to have hipster friends.
Well, what's interesting,
I'll
though,
get you a
that you said that your mom...
Have your people talk to my
I thought the whole appeal of this film and the whole cult surrounding this thing was that you had to be a stoner to really get the movie, you know, because that's what the whole dude is he's just
right.
like this stoner kind of guy. But I don't know what your mom's into.
My mom can quote that film to you, you know.
It's pretty remarkable the following it has.
Just connects with some people on a level that I don't get, you know. I don't get it, you know. What's a film... that, you see, like, if you told me that the original movie, The Producers, the Mel Brooks, Zero Mostel, Gene Wilder, Kenneth Mars,
you're awesome on record as being one of your favorites.
Right, had a cult following, and that people would go dressed up as lines, you know, like, like Carmen Ghia, the guy who's Roger Debris' male secretary.
Right,
you know,
LSD.
And like, and people would, I could say, all right, I could kind of see this, you know what I mean? But the Big Lebowski, I just don't get it. I guess they're wearing purple shoes like John Turturro does as the Jesus.
It's people get very, 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 very detailed at the Lebowski Fest.
All right. Well, anyway.
Good for the Coens.
Yeah.
Good for the Coens, yeah. Well, anyway, before we talk about some other movies that are on demand, I actually want to talk about this Horace and Pete thing. Okay, so Louis C.K. at some Television Critics Association convention or something a couple of weeks ago was asked if he was going to continue with the TV show Louis. And he goes, you know, I think I've exhausted it. Maybe I'll revisit it in a number of years when maybe he's thinking that the kids, the young daughters in the show when they get older. So he goes,
Larry David, like Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Are they going to do another season?
Well, that's what they all want to know. I mean, whenever I talk to Susie Essman, or anybody else on that show.
They don't know either.
They're not sure. They said, we'll get the call, and the HBO said to him, he can do it anytime. And I have to imagine FX would say the exact same thing to Louis.
Well, the thing with Curb Your Enthusiasm is I understand that Larry David was so annoyed at the bad response to the Seinfeld finale that he didn't really want to, like, say, okay, this is our last episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. But I think he also leaves the door open. I mean, you know, HBO will let him do whatever he wants, so... you know, it's like you want to do one in 5 years. It's been quite a number of years since he's done another episode.
Right. So I think Louis has the same entree.
So anyway, so Louis doesn't say anything because I'm working on some other projects. I'm working on producing something with Pamela Adlon, who you might remember from Weeds, and she also crops up in Louis, and I think they're very good friends in real life. But he doesn't mention anything. So anyway, so Saturday morning, there's an email blast to anybody that subscribes to any, ever bought a Louis C.K. special or is on it.
Right.
And there's this blast that goes out going, I just made a television show. You know, totally, you know, it's $5. You know, check it out. I hope you like it. And
how many episodes do you get for $5?
You get one episode.
What?
You get a 67-minute. It's like a play. It's sort of like it's called Horace and Pete, and Horace and Pete are the two proprietors of this bar. It is like Cheers meets meets Arthur Miller. It has an all-star cast. No, it's not. I would say it's more drama than comedy. There are some dark comedic moments in the thing, but it is not a comedy on any level. It's about alcoholics that hang out in a rundown bar. It's not a hip bar. It's a bar in Brooklyn in some unhip neighborhood.
There's no such thing.
You know, you're right. And when when hipster people walk in, Alan Alda, who's the racist bartender, throws them out. Somebody comes in and says, wanted a
white Russian?
No, not a white Russian, but it was some other kind of
frou-frou.
It wasn't something complicated. It was like, no mixed drinks here. You know, we serve beer, we serve whiskey.
I'd like a rum and Coke.
Scotch.
And
he gets no, out for no mixed drinks. Drink. Only beer, whiskey, or, you know, and
Boilermaker? What? Would that be a mixed drink?
I don't know. They just wanted like it wasn't an elaborate drink. It was something on the level of
Alda, who else is in it?
So Alda's in it. Jessica Lange is in it.
Wow.
Edie Falco is in it. Steve Buscemi is in it. Louis is in it. And then you have his supporting roles, bar patrons. You have Stephen Wright.
Man.
You have Nick DiPaolo. You have a comedian by the name of Lisa Traeger. And then there's other people that just walk in and out. You go, oh my God, was that just, you know, I don't want to give it away. But it's a play. I mean, there's an intermission. You buy this thing on your computer for $5 and there's an intermission.
And what have they told us about how many or more there are?
They haven't told you anything. It says episode one, and there's a couple of blank spaces underneath it. So I have to assume if you're calling something episode one, there's going to be more episodes to come.
Look at Star Wars.
And it's a pilot.
And it's not a there are unresolved bits of business in this thing. So, I mean,
the hangers of Cliff?
Well, you know, even my wife goes, well, what was the point of that guy walking in? There's a guy at one point who walks in and he talks about the fact that he just got out of prison and he killed his wife, his lover, because he came to the bar and he just got out. And, like, and that's just kind of dropped. So my wife was going, well, if there's more episodes, if there's more episodes, then I understand that that'll be a plot point. If there isn't, if it's a standalone thing, it just kind of stops the action. What was the point of that entire, 5-minute sequence? But it's good. If you like Louis, if you like the writing style and the sensibility of Louis C.K., you like it. And I like this thing. And he's completely bucking the trend of going through a network, which he kind of did with the stand-up stuff.
Specials,
he's not going through Netflix or FX or...
Now, that's what's interesting, is he's not going through one of the streaming
services. Right, he's going
either.
Screw you. I'm just going to make a thing. And he's got all-star cast in it, and it's filmed professionally. And it's like... Give me the money directly, $5.
I'm lost at the, if you like Louis C.K. premise, though, because I think of him as being a comedic writer, and this is sort of, I don't know what to judge it against.
Maybe he's kind of pulling a Steve Martin.
Watch the Louis show? I mean, I know I recommend
it to
you.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times.
Okay, right. You like the arc with
David Letterman replacement storyline
exactly.
Was funny.
Well, but there were some Louis episodes that aren't funny at all.
The On Road. The two-tier dump into the toilet. And remember, he's going to the bathroom and somebody comes.
Well, there are some Louis episodes that really aren't funny at all, that have like a couple of moments of humor, but are pretty much dramatic pieces. There's an episode which won the Emmy, actually, of Louis, where it's called Fat Girl. I think that's the name of the episode, where somebody invites him to go to a Ranger game and has great seats, and it's a whole discussion with her about, she talks about how she's overweight and what's the matter, you don't want to go. It's not a funny episode. episode, right. but it's a great episode. So this is more along the lines of that. It's kind of dramatic.
And he's done dramatic acting. He's in Trumbo. He was in
Blue Jasmine.
Blue Jasmine.
Right?
He's pretty good in that. Mm-hmm. So
that's right. So there you go. So what do you want to talk about, X-Files? Do you want to say something about X-Files?
I had read that it was coming back. It did huge numbers for Fox, and I was a little late to the party, so I watched, I think, the second episode. There are three out right now, and I thought it was just terrible. I mean, I just thought it was like a camp version of X-Files. I remember the original ones being kind of creepy cool and interesting, and that music sort of setting the tone for what is a cool TV show. This was like goofy and weird, like The Night Stalker. Remember that Kolchak, Darren McGavin show
yes.
from like the 70s?
Yes,
like
I remember that.
That, like stupid.
Did you watch The X-Files?
No, I actually didn't like The X-Files.
I didn't like The X-Files either.
Yeah.
I preferred Duchovny in Californication.
Is Duchovny, and what?
Yeah, they're both
and
back.
And there's a whole thing where she's Gillian Anderson.
Gillian Anderson.
Is getting half the money Duchovny was getting. There was a whole story that was circulating around that.
They look to be playing nicely in the sandbox in this, but I have to tell you, I think it's going to be short-lived, and it's too bad because I think they're both very talented.
Now, wait. Well, I thought Bradley Cooper laid down the mandate that we all have to be transparent about our salaries. Didn't he say that?
Yeah.
How come Duchovny's not playing ball?
Maybe that was the Bradley Cooper impersonator that
Maybe
was crashing
that was.
The parties.
Right, the doppelgangers.
At Sunday.
If you don't know what we're talking about, there are some twins that look exactly like Bradley Cooper and are now bemoaning
the fact.
Are
they twins? I thought it was one guy.
No, they're identical
wow.
twins. So they can be anywhere now. It's sort of like sending the clones.
But apparently they threw the guy out of he claimed to be Bradley Cooper at Sundance, and he walks into a party.
Well,
and
actually he didn't. He like the, his thing was, I don't say I'm Bradley Cooper. I just show up and they go, oh, come right in.
Oh,
they think
really?
He's Bradley
That's
Cooper.
Great.
His thing was, I'm never going to say I'm him.
Oh, that's kind of
cool.
Right, because if you don't say you're Bradley Cooper and you're just
right.
assuming that's interesting. A couple of movies came out very quickly on demand, on DVD, this week that we talked about on the TV show. None of them are that noteworthy to me.
Some are for how well cast they are, but how lousy
do them
they
quickly.
Yeah, like Rock the Casbah's, actually.
Don't say that. You want people to keep listening.
Rock the Casbah. Don't even ask me to recall the plot, because I did see it. But I don't really remember what it was about. I just remember being bored to tears.
He's a rock manager, burnt out
rock manager,
who goes to Afghanistan.
Baghdad Danny Rose, I call him on the show.
That's yeah. right, yeah.
And discovers the next singer. And what's the name of that show? It's like the
Afghan Idol.
It's like,
Afghan
it's like
star
American Idol.
Yeah.
Right.
He finds a star. He finds a star in a cave that apparently had cable. And sounds ridiculous. This thing is 8% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I don't think it deserves. I really don't. I think
but it doesn't deserve.
It's not
like
great
50%.
At all. No, but if you're as I said on the show, if you're a big Bill Murray fan, this will test your patience for him. But I think you have to see it for him, and it's just him. And don't expect anything else. Kate
it's
Hudson looks kind of cute.
No,
in
there's not. There's
I don't.
Not
I don't classify
single,
it as unwatchable.
Not one
I laughed a couple of times.
And Bruce Willis is wasted
oh,
in this.
God,
and Zoe Deschanel yeah. is wasted
Danny
in this.
And Kate Hudson.
Bride is wasted in this. But you know, I'll tell you
Scott
something, Bill. You're always quoting, and not so much on the podcast, but on the television show, the percentage on Rotten Tomatoes, that 8% on Rotten Tomatoes, if you took the time to actually, you know, see what these people were saying, the 8% is really like, okay, it's not like, oh, 8%, that's awful. It just sounds awful. But I think that's like if you get a negative, a predominantly negative review, there's a score. You know, I mean, I could be wrong. So if you read the actual, what they wrote, I think they're saying like, well, there's a couple of moments here and there, but I don't know.
Which is precisely what I'm saying. I know that that Rotten Tomatoes has been accused
well,
of skewing.
Well, you were complaining that they give you an unfavorable, sometimes a favorable something on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And you're like, don't they read my thing?
Because right.
Well, you write for Newsday. Rafe is a great writer, and he's the movie critic for Newsday, New York Newsday.
Which and he's featured on Rotten Tomatoes. He's what's called a favorite or
I'm a top critic.
Top critic.
Top
right.
critic. There's top critics, which is kind of cool because, you know, if you we're critics and, you know, anybody can be a critic, but at least they differentiate the people that are accredited critics. But
I think I'm a bottom critic.
But you told me a long time ago that, right, they would give you, like, they put a tomato if it's favorable, and they put a little green asterisk.
The splat if it's,
splat,
if it's bad.
Right. And they're saying that you've gotten some favorable things where you've, like, hated the movie.
Well, they'll call me up and they'll say, like, like, well, you know, is it rotten or is it fresh? Do you think it's rotten or is it fresh? And I kind of feel like I know where you're coming from, but I mean, you know, I gave the movie kind of a considered review. I thought it was sort of a straight down the middle movie.
But is it black or is it white?
That's exactly.
There's
no
gray.
And they press you. They press you to say. Yeah. And so and that's why I'm saying about that might be what Neil is saying about Rotten Tomatoes. That it's a little bit winner take all, right? I mean, it's sort of, you know, if your review is kind of mostly negative, then it's a negative, and it goes in the negative, and then it's sort of cumulatively.
But
with
what's
all the
interesting
other reviews,
is, it, I mean, you know, if you're reviewing films, what most might actually the audience might find this interesting is that, you know, Rotten Tomatoes or even the old Siskel and Ebert system of thumbs up, thumbs down is being forced to say, you know, like good or bad.
Right.
Where most movies, as Roger Ebert once said, and I couldn't agree more, are not really great or really terrible. They're fine. They fall in the middle somewhere. Like,
right.
Yes, this was bad, but this part of the movie was okay, you know?
Right.
So I guess it comes down to, you know, I guess the Siskel and Ebert thing is like thumbs up, thumbs down. And the bottom line is, do I recommend the movie for you to see it?
Yeah.
With the Rotten Tomatoes, it's like, oh, it's a good review, it's a bad review, but it's a mixed review.
Right,
and they don't have that.
They can't
think
do
about
it.
All
they
the times. Think about all the times you've said to somebody about a lousy movie, it's worth seeing for so and so's performance.
Well, I said that about
that
Suffragette.
Would come up,
Suffragette, which is about the women's movement in 1912 in England. I think that the movie is not a very good movie. It's an important subject matter, but I think I thought Carrie Mulligan's performance was great. I thought she was great in the movie. You don't agree? You didn't think she
No,
did.
I thought Kelly Mulligan was good.
I
thought Ben
Whishaw
was good as her husband. I mean, I thought there were a lot of good performances. And Brendan Gleeson
was good.
If you love Meryl Streep, you can skip it.
If you love Meryl Streep, blink and you'll miss it.
Blink and you'll miss her, exactly.
That's
she shows
true.
Up on the balcony and that's about
that's
it.
That's true.
Yeah. No, I mean, I my complaint on Suffragette was just that I didn't even mind that it was kind of formulaic. It was, as we were saying on the show, I just could not make heads or tails out of the ending.
I was going to say, most formulas have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and this just had a beginning and a middle, and then it started rolling the credits.
Right.
Like, and actually, the credits were part of the most interesting part
I
about
said,
the movie.
Yeah, we said that on the air.
What
the credits,
countries?
Switzerland.
1990?
Was it 1990? Yeah. Some of them were in the 60s.
Saudi Arabia is still working on
it.
Saudi Arabia is still in work in progress.
Spotlight has great end credits, too. I mean,
that's the one good thing about Spotlight.
Oh, come on. Spotlight's great.
Oh, you didn't like Spotlight, Bill?
I thought it was overhyped.
No,
I thought it was a little overhyped, too, but I like Spotlight.
I like it.
But that's the same thing where you read the credits at the end. You go, oh, my God. Like,
right.
Look at all these hundreds of countries where this is going on.
Yeah.
Big Short, the film that will probably beat Spotlight
no,
at the
it's
Oscars.
Not.
No, it's
no,
not.
It's not.
It's not. Despite the PGA, it's not.
No, it's
no.
not. It's going to be Spotlight.
It's going to be Spotlight.
It's going to be Spotlight. It's going to be Leo. It's going to be Brie Larson.
Yep.
It's going to be Sylvester Stallone.
Yep.
And it's going to be...
Rooney.
And it's going to be... it's going to be Vikander. Alicia Vikander.
But I don't have to watch that.
Have to tune in now. Thank you.
That's right. I'm telling you. That's it. Don't even bother. And it'll be Big Short for screenplay, and the other screenplay will be
what, adapted?
Yeah, it will be Spotlight.
Oh, no, that'll be adapted.
We'll
be, Spotlight will get original it. Screenplay.
And there. I just saved you 4 hours of Academy Award watching.
Don't even tune in for the controversy or to see what Rick.
No, I want
to
see Chris Rock.
All right. Next week on the show, unless you want to talk about Freeheld.
No, you can skip it.
I don't.
Next week on the show.
All I can say is it's an unhot. Lesbian movie. You don't need to watch it.
No, I think
you can't say that.
I think it's a very important movie that tackles a subject.
It was supposed to be an important movie.
It's an important subject. I'm sorry. It's an important subject that they should have made a better movie about it. I feel that the story was shortchanged because it's such an important story. I'm sorry. It's an important movie. It's such an important story that I wish the movie did it justice. It's formulaic. It's melodramatic. It's just not...
And a bad performance, which rarely happens from Michael Shannon, but we have him in a new movie next week.
We do.
Called 99 Homes.
Well, the problem with
Freeheld
that's
a great movie.
It's like a lifetime, as we said on the show, it's a lifetime movie of the week.
Yeah.
Yes, 99 Homes we're going to be talking about next week. We're also going to be talking next week about...
My buddy, Michael Moore, Where to Invade Next.
That's true. The new movie that hits theaters, his latest documentary. We're going to be talking about... what's the other movie, McCuddy, that we're going to be talking about? Come on. You can tell.
Well, we're talking about a slew of other documentaries that are also issue-oriented. And then...
Grandma. We're going to be talking about Grandma.
The Lily Tomlin movie.
And then we're going to talk about something that's coming out also in theaters, the Idris Elba. Are we doing the Idris Elba? No, we're doing Tumble Down. We're doing Tumble Down.
Kind of the way these sentences are coming out of our mouths
tumbling,
at this point.
They're not tumbling out.
They're tumbling straight down.
All right. So, what do you think, Broccoli? We call it a day.
Let's call it a show, damn it.
All right. All right. So I didn't have you say your signature line, Bill.
We watch the bad movies, so you don't have to.
That's absolutely true. And on that note, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us today. Thanks, Bill Broccoli. Thank you, Bill McCuddy. Thank you, Rafer Guzman. And we'll see you next week, but it's a podcast. They don't see us. So you,
there's a lot that needs to be explained to you technically.
All right. We'll catch you next week. Thanks a lot.